Support for WPR comes from Focus on Energy. Committed to helping Wisconsinites focus on the planet by making smart energy choices. Energy resources for Earth Day and every day can be found at focusonenergy.com.
We're going to talk about the psychology of the Baltimore riot this hour and what we can learn from the unrest. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, April 30th. We will welcome your reactions and questions about what's happening in Baltimore and in some other cities around the country, and what you think needs to happen to prevent future violence in just a few minutes. But first, Bill Martens is back because it is still Wisconsin Public Radio's spring membership drive. You count on Wisconsin Public Radio for great discussions, and it's your gift of any amount that makes all of these discussions possible. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Enjoy, we got a big hour here. We have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $6,200, so that's awesome. We have a couple of 9XM Leadership Circle members to thank for that, Joe and Jean Silverberg from Madison. There's also a 9XM member from Middleton who contributed, and that means they'll match every dollar you give. So that's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Double the support for the programs you love, but you got to give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You hear great guests all day long on the Ideas Network. It's a unique radio service. It's the only one like it in the country. Your support makes it possible. Pledge now for the station you rely on and the one you enjoy, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
During this membership drive, you can get the fourth annual WPR Artist Mug when you give $12.50 a month. That's $150 or more for the year. Your donation supports the programs you count on, and you can also get this gorgeous mug, Joy.
The mug is USA-made. It features a lovely design by award-winning Wisconsin artist Nick Robleski. It's a wood-cut print. It features two elegant swans soaring through a starry night sky. So you can check out the design and ask for yours now when you pledge at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
My name is Laura Jasper. I'm from Cameron, Wisconsin. I'm a member of the board of the Wisconsin Public Radio Association. I listen to Wisconsin Public Radio for ideas. For me, Wisconsin Public Radio is simply integrated with my daily life. I wake up to Wisconsin Public Radio. I listen to it in the car. Not a day goes by that I don't listen to Wisconsin Public Radio.
You can make your donation in support of the programs you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. There's been a lot of news about the state budget, and as proposed, the budget puts state funding for Wisconsin public broadcasting at risk. You tell us that you value the lasting impact of public broadcasting programs, news, conversation, music, and even entertainment.
And that's why Wisconsin public broadcasting, including WPR, is working hard to address this budget challenge as the process goes forward. Meanwhile, listener support is more important than ever, so please make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Chances are WPR is a preset in your home and on your car radio. You listen to Wisconsin Public Radio a lot. So that means it's time to become a contributing member.
Yeah, help pay for the station you listen to so much. Make the switch from someone who listens to someone who listens and contributes. And you can start with a pledge of $5 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And that dollar-for-dollar match is in effect and will be for up to $6,200. So give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And your support of WPR will go twice as far.
And remember, your pledge of just $12.50 a month or $150 for a year, you can ask for the 2015 WPR Artist Mug with the two swans on the night sky by Wisconsin artist Nick Robleski. It's a great-looking mug. And again, $12.50 $50 a month. Get it doubled in the process if you take care of that this hour. WDPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks to Jennifer from La Crosse, who says, I listen to WPR a lot and have called in to get answers to questions on many different subjects. I want my WPR to stick around. Thank you for all you do and all the great shows and hosts and guests. Take a bow. Wow, is that ever nice,
yeah,
Jennifer.
Thank you
so much. You can join Jennifer and many others by contributing to a service that needs your contributions and to a service that you value. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your pledge of $50 will become $100. 100 becomes 200 because we have that dollar-for-dollar match in effect up to $6,200 this hour. So don't wait any longer. Make that pledge now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you very much, Bill. We will talk to you in a bit. Frank Farley is a psychologist at Temple University, past president of the American Psychological Association. He is also the president-elect of the APA's Society for the Study of Peace, Conflict, and Violence. He used to teach at UW-Madison, and he is our go-to psychologist when there are issues in the news involving psychology. And according to Frank Farley, leaders in Baltimore failed in two major ways to contain the violence following the death of Freddie Gray, who was critically injured while in police custody. We will discuss the lessons he says we can learn from Baltimore's riot. He also looks at the personalities of those behind the destructive behavior and what he says can be done to minimize future unrest. And we will welcome your questions and your views at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Frank Farley, Temple University psychologist. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So, it's been quiet mostly now in Baltimore over the past couple of days following the riot on Monday, where buildings were burned and police officers were attacked. The National Guard was called in. Curfews were established. Schools were closed. There still have been some mostly peaceful demonstrations, some arrests. What is your reaction to what's happening now in Baltimore?
Well, obviously things are improving, and the citizens have gotten out on the street and in a peaceful manner, the so-called unity lines, and so everyone has been getting out to help clean up. So all of those are very positive behaviors. But again, the fact that they have to do all that, that they have to do the cleanup is the issue.
You told my producer, Bill Martins, that the violence, the riots that we saw in Baltimore on Monday were different than what took place in other cities like Ferguson. How so?
Well, Friday night was almost a youth riot. Huge numbers, high schoolers and other youth, and that was different. I spent time in Ferguson. I went there in August for a couple of days and nights. This was the event in Baltimore on Monday night was just quite different. It was really a rampage. And my best guess is that it was sort of what I would call a type T rampage. Thrill-seeking, excitement-seeking, fun, responding to the opportunity to have, a really risk-taking, thrill-seeking, exciting time. A long, hard winter was over, and the weather was pretty good, and the police were restrained, they've been criticized roundly for holding back too much on Monday night. And so the conditions were just incendiary for the kind of riot that happened. And profit, that is, breaking into stores and getting stuff. So it had certain overtones of a flash mob. You know, we're familiar with flash mobs. Philadelphia used to be almost the national center for flash mobs. We haven't seen many flash mobs in the last two or three years. But where, you know, kids will get together, they'll text in each other and say, you know, get together at the corner of Main Street and 10th. Yeah. And that's it. No details. And so you get, you know, hundreds of kids congregating, and somebody, you know, throws a brick through a window and away it goes. And it just gets totally out of control.
So how would you describe the personalities or the psychology of those who were demonstrating then in Ferguson? There were some, you know, fires and violence associated in Ferguson, too.
There was. That is absolutely correct. But, you know, it was smaller in scope, and it didn't seem to have this sort of quick growth quality to it.
I'm trying to understand, Frank, if the demonstrators in Ferguson, based on your time there and your research there, whether those demonstrations were fueled more by the social and racial injustices than what you think happened in Baltimore.
Oh, I do think that. Yes. And, you know, it was a much smaller catchment area, if you will. You know, Ferguson's a small town. Baltimore's a big city. And so the numbers alone were substantially different. And that can lead to more what we call emotional contagion or social facilitation in this kind of a riot. So it simply was bigger in Baltimore, and therefore more possibilities to do damage and for somebody to start something and the other people to pile on and join in. But, in Ferguson, it was, you know, it was clear that Michael Brown was shot by a white cop. There was just simply no question about what happened. And so that became the focal point. And so the demonstrations, I think, were more directed at the social justice and the racial justice issues. But they're definitely, look, you know, public demonstrations can often lead to property damage. There's nothing new there. And again, that's that kind of social facilitation, emotional contagion idea, you know, that somebody throws a brick through the window and then other ones sort of pile on. Yeah. And any demonstration that might even be directed by justice motivations can get out of hand.
We have a caller, Dave in Milwaukee, who wants to get in on the conversation. Hi, Dave.
Hello, how you doing?
Good. Yes, I understand that you are taking some issue with what Frank Farley is saying.
Yes. Let me just take you off speaker here. Okay. I was just saying that the teenagers and stuff that's out here, the reason why they demonstrated the way they did, I believe, is because they're young and they just kind of like fed up with watching all the young people get killed by the police and stuff like that. And they figuring the adults ain't going to stand up and do what they do. Children, they don't think the way we think, and they don't understand consequences behind their actions. And so they tend to lash out a whole lot more and do a whole lot of other things like throwing the rocks and all that, you know. I don't think that they should have been throwing rocks and bricks. It's a different way of handling that, but they need some guidance on how to protest because obviously they do not know how to protest. And I think the police handled it pretty well. Because on both sides, being a citizen, or if I was a cop and they throwing rocks, I would have took that as a threat, and I would have moved forward. But being a citizen and angry, I would have tried to attack that a different kind of way instead of, like, with violence and throwing rocks at them. So I just think that they need to learn how to protest. You know, they need more guidance, and officials need to actually implement that in schools and stuff on how to handle situations with cognitive thinking.
Thank you very much, Dave. A couple of different points here, Frank Farley. I think he believes that the teenagers that were rioting in Baltimore were rioting because they were fed up with with racial injustice and black males being killed by police officers. But it sounds to me that you're saying that's not the primary motivator of those riots.
Well, we don't know, you know, what are the primary motivators, but I do agree with Dave that some of them would be feeling seriously aggrieved and want to express that, and that they, you know, they need lessons in how to appropriately protest on American streets. But I think it went beyond that. You know, it just got into a rampage, and you know, what I would call the type T personalities, the sort of thrill-seeking, risk-taking personality type, which is a great American personality type, by the way, when it's expressed positively, and because it can show itself in creativity and in innovation and so on. But there's a destructive side to that personality. And I think a lot of the kids who were out in the streets were of that, you know, that type. I don't think that you were going to have sort of extremely risk-averse, kids going out and doing that. The risk level was too high, the danger was too high, etc., and they would stay at home. And so the ones who actually went out and did it are probably sort of qualitatively different kids than the ones who did not go out and demonstrate. But it's a recipe, and there are many ingredients in it. Social injustice, racial injustice are one of the ingredients, but also the thrill-seeking, risk-taking, excitement-seeking, the fun, getting out and doing stuff. You know, it's like what can sometimes happen on Halloween when kids get out and do, you know, do some destruction, and it's a lot of fun. And so there was that quality to it also. So it was just a volatile mix.
Let me hold you there, Frank Farley. We will talk more about the psychology behind the violence in Baltimore, and we'll talk about how to prevent future violence. We'll, when we come back, talk some about Frank Farley thinks we can learn some lessons from how the city's mayor and the police responded in Baltimore, and maybe even apply that in Wisconsin. Madison is anticipating a decision as to whether or not a police officer will be charged in the shooting death of African-American Tony Robinson. That decision is expected any day. We'll talk with Frank Farley about that coming up. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. I'm Joy Cardine with Bill Martins. We're here to ask you to invest a few minutes of your time to support the programs you rely on. Programs like this one. Make your gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We've got a dollar-for-dollar match in effect this hour from 9XM Leadership Circle members Joe and Gene Silverberg from Madison and a 9XM member from Middleton. So your gift of $50 will turn into $100. $100 becomes $200. You get the idea. So take advantage of this match and double your support for WPR programs when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
WPR has been around a long time because we're committed to quality, and that quality is possible thanks to you. Listener donations make up the single largest piece of our budget.
Your contribution makes the Joy Cardine Show possible and many other programs as well. Your part of the quality you hear every day on WPR when you donate at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You give to WPR to support the programs you value. And as an added incentive, we have something special during this spring membership drive. It's the latest in our annual series of WPR artist mugs, the 2015 WPR artist mug designed by Nick Robleski, an award-winning woodcut printmaker from the Driftless region of Wisconsin.
And this artist mug series is a great tradition, and this year's mug is really nice. It's got two swans flying through a starry night sky, great color, nice full moon. It's yours for $12.50 a month. That's $150 or more for the year. Ask for your mug now and show your support for WPR when you make your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
What I enjoy about WPR is that they always have topics that are of interest to me. I like to keep up on current events, I like to keep up on Wisconsin politics, and I feel like WPR has really been my go-to source for that information. I feel like when I am a sustaining member of WPR that I am paying for a service, basically. Wisconsin Public Radio is something that sustains me throughout the year. It sustains me during my work day. I listen to it. It keeps me informed and educated, so I wanted to give back. My mother always told me that the free things we receive in life, we should try to give back to later on in life. So that's something that I feel very strongly about, too. It makes me feel like I'm carrying on that tradition. I'm Bridget from Oak Creek, Wisconsin. I encourage you to join me in sustaining Wisconsin Public Radio.
You can pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Joy Cardine with Bill Martins asking for your support of WPR during this spring membership drive. You can pledge any amount. Maybe your gift is $10 a month or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
And seize the day. Pledge right now while you're thinking about it. It takes just a few minutes to contribute. So far, we've heard from 9 members looking for 33 more by 8 o'clock. Got about half an hour. So make that pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And thank you very much. We have met the dollar-for-dollar match. That dollar-for-dollar match is no longer in effect for this hour, but we still need your pledge to help pay for the programs that you value at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And with your gift of $12.50 a month or $150 for the year, ask for the WPR Artist Mug, the 2015 WPR Artist Mug from Wisconsin artist Nick Robleski of Viroqua. It's got two magnificent swans on there, and again, that can be yours for $12.50 a month when you pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks to Joshua in La Crosse, who says, when I turn the keys in my car, WPR is the first station I'm tuned to. I've been listening for years, and it's about time I gave a little for as much as I receive. Thank you for all of your programs. Thank you, Joshua, for your pledge. You can pledge, too, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thanks, Bill. We'll talk to you in a little while. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking right now with Frank Farley, a psychologist at Temple University, past president of the American Psychological Association, president-elect of the APA's Society for the Study of Peace, Conflict, and Violence. We'll talk with Frank Farley about a summit that he is planning in the near future to try to prevent the violence that we have been seeing in our American cities. Violence like the violence we saw in Baltimore this week during a riot that ensued after Freddie Gray's death in police custody. Freddie Gray was had his funeral on on Monday. Demonstrations broke into riots, and we are talking about the psychology of those riots during this hour, among other things. I wanted to let me take a call. Who's been waiting? That is related to the rioting and the looting. Jim in Dubuque is with us. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I agree that a lot of the damage done by people who weren't really protesting but saw it as an opportunity to steal or whatnot. But I think a possible solution to much of this would be to get rid of the supposed reason for this, which is cases where people are shot in the back six times while they're running away and the policeman says he felt he was in danger and whatnot. I think when they lose a loss, when the law officer loses a lawsuit, but that money should not be paid by the public. It should be paid out of their pension fund and not made up by the public with a reduction in their benefits. That way the police would get rid of their bad apples, would get rid of the blue line where people or these police are covering for each other. At least that would get rid of the excuse of and the fact of perhaps police illegal activity. But I think also, we have a U.S. culture that seems to maximize violence and greed and ignorance, and we reap what we sow.
We're losing you, Jim. I'm sorry about that. Well, I guess he says that the people who were, that were looting were certainly not justified in the looting, but the cause of all this is, he says, police misconduct. Frank Farley?
Well, there is police misconduct, no question in this. But we have to watch out for one thing. In psychology, we call it confirmation bias, which is that if you get an idea in your mind that cops are bad, then everything you see reinforces that idea. And so you see police misbehavior everywhere. And it's very important for us to keep it, as precise as we can and as valid and justified as we can. So, but there is definitely a broader issue that goes beyond police behavior, by the way. And some of your listeners may have heard Hillary Clinton talking about it at a talk at Columbia University, yesterday, I believe. But we do have a serious racial issue in criminal justice in America. The fact that a white person and a black person could commit exactly the same crime, the black person would be sentenced approximately to a 20% longer prison sentence for the same crime is outrageous. And the incarceration rate in America is a scandal. We can't lock people up fast enough. And racial issues are front stage center in a lot of that. So hopefully these demonstrations will get to that level of discussion, to the bigger picture, as to throughout the whole criminal justice system, can we clear out, the racist quality? I'll give you a quick point that goes back to the Zimmerman case. So I was studying the Zimmerman case, so I went through the FBI Uniform Crime Report data. And if you remember the Zimmerman case, Trayvon Martin was described as engaged in suspicious behavior. And if you look at the FBI data and go and down, way down, way down below murder one, you get down to a category called arrests for suspicious behavior. And in that category, the arrest rate for black males was something like, 40 to 50% of all the arrests made were of black males. Black males constitute less than 10% of the American population. And so when there's ambiguity and uncertainty in a situation, I think that racism can come to the fore. And so that number just leapt off the page at me. 49% of the arrests for suspicious behavior were of black males. And blacks in America constitute about 12% of the country, roughly. So about, 6 or 7% of that would be black males, in fact. Yet 49% of the arrests for suspicious behavior in America are of black males. And then I just mentioned the 20% longer sentence in many cases. So that's the kind of stuff we have to look at. And we've got to do something about cutting down this incredible incarceration rate.
Yeah, let me take out John in Somerset. Hi, John. John, I'm sorry, we can't take your call if you're not by the phone. So if you want to hold on, maybe we'll get you after this break. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Frank Farley, who is a psychologist at Temple University, past president of the American Psychological Association. We will continue talking with him some more about some of the factors that allowed the Baltimore demonstrations to get out of hand, and some advice that Frank Farley has for the Madison and Dane County community as we are awaiting a decision in a case involving a white police officer who fatally shot an African-American man. But first, Bill Martins joins me as we are in our spring membership drive and need to ask you to keep supporting Wisconsin Public Radio with a pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We've got a goal of 42 pledges this hour. We're looking to hear from 23 more by 8 o'clock. So we need those pledges, and you can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You listen to WPR year-round. Now donate the same way you listen. You can become a sustaining member. Make the decision once, and you'll make affordable contributions of, say, $5 or $10 or $20 a month for as long as you wish.
It's easy on your budget, and it cuts down on paperwork. So there you go. Don't delay. Become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your call is important to us, so please leave a message after the beep.
I want to try to help people recognize the importance of Wisconsin Public Radio. They provide such a good, non-biased background for us to make our decisions by. We need to recognize that the newspapers and the television programs are owned predominantly from the same people. So this is one of the few sources that we have non-biased information from both sides. Look at that, and let's understand this little gold mine that we have.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and make your pledge during our spring membership drive. Joy Cardine with Bill Martins asking for your support of WPR. You decide how much to donate to Wisconsin Public Radio. Your gift of $10 or $15 a month, whatever amount you choose, that is the right amount.
If you've never given to Wisconsin Public Radio because you didn't think you can give enough to make a difference, well, think again, because listener donations make up the single largest piece of our budget, but that doesn't mean we're asking you for a huge gift here. Many first-time donors give $5 a month for their WPR listening. You decide the amount that works for you, and then make that gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks to Mary from Delafield, who says, I learn so much from listening to WPR. It's coverage that I trust and keeps me informed about what's happening locally and throughout the world. Thanks to Nicole from Oconomowoc, who says, I listen every morning on my commute. WPR gets me mentally prepared for my day ahead. Thank you both for your pledges of support. How about you? WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
22 more pledges by 8 o'clock. We got about 20 minutes to make that goal, and you can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks very much, Bill. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the psychology of the Baltimore riots. Our guest is psychologist Frank Farley, looking at the personalities of those behind the destructive behavior that we saw on Monday in Baltimore. And we're talking about what can be done to minimize future unrest. And we're welcoming your reaction and your views, your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. All right, we're going to go back to John in Somerset. And John promises he's going to be by the phone now. Hi, John.
Yes. Hi. Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
Yes, I look at it this way. I think it's the ideologies of these people, that these agitators that come in, they want to turn our system upside down. They have, like, the police, military, and Christians, and their targets, and they're just outside agitators hell-bent on destruction of cities. They're looking for excuse to come in and do this. They're kind of a roving mob.
Yeah, so are there outside agitators involved in Baltimore or any of these other cities, Frank Farley?
Actually, I haven't heard any numbers on that one. That was alleged in Ferguson. In fact, I spent some time talking with a guy who was sort of claiming to be a kind of an outsider coming in and, stirring the pot, et cetera. And I kept hearing about anarchists. You know, I hadn't heard that word for a long time until I went to Ferguson. I didn't run into any anarchists there. Maybe there were some, but I certainly didn't bump into them in my very intense time there. And I haven't heard anything like that about the Baltimore situation. Again, that Monday night thing had so many hallmarks of a flash mob, something that just got out of hand, and it moved very fast, and a lot of youth, it sounds trite, but the weather was beautiful, and so a whole bunch of kids got out in the streets, and yes, there was some ideology involved, but there also was, the thrill value of a mob and a riot and setting things on fire, and the excitement and thrill-seeking. So I'm not aware of outside agitators in the Baltimore case.
You know, a woman in Baltimore got international news coverage because she was caught on video pulling her son from the middle of the riots and swatting him across the side of the head multiple times, essentially telling him to go home. She said later that she didn't want him to be another Freddie Gray, the man who died in police custody that touched off all this unrest. She's been dubbed by many as Mom of the Year, people saying we need more like her. What did you think of her actions?
Well, her name is Toya Graham. I mean, it was interesting to say the least, but we don't want more moms, engage in corporal punishment of their children. But if you examine the video closely, she really wasn't hurting him. She was humiliating him. It was not corporal punishment, really, in the way that we condemn in psychology. So it was kind of a public humiliation of her son. And well, it's pretty interesting. I enjoyed the New York Post cover story, which says, "Send the National Guard home. Bring out the moms."
Bring out the moms. Maybe just a quick thought on whether some people say that we need more discipline in the homes and permissive and or single parent homes are leading to kids that will go out and riot.
Well, it's difficult to parent, in the modern world with such a proportion of single family homes and low income and bad employment opportunities in neighborhood and community poverty, all of that is very difficult. Mm-hmm. And I just can't imagine, how difficult it is for her to raise six children under all of those conditions. So we need to deal with that. Poverty is at the center of so many of our problems. It's just not racism. It's also you know, economic disparities that really need to be fully addressed and dealt with. And, you know, she, in a sense, was expressing all of those things. She saw her son on television, and, you know, but lots of parents don't know what their kids are doing. Mm-hmm. So it emphasizes the power of parenting. And how important it is.
You also told my producer, Bill Martins, that you think there were two main factors that allowed the demonstrations to get out of hand. One was a lack of a clear message by Baltimore Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake. She made a comment last weekend that some people interpreted as allowing or inviting the violence. She later said that she merely meant Baltimore is a city that allows protests to take place and that people took advantage of that line. She had made some sort of comment about, you know, letting the protesters have some space. How problematic was that message from the mayor?
Well, I think it was important. I'm not convinced that a lot of the rioters on Monday night even knew what she said. You know, who follows word for word what community leaders say? So again, I think a lot of the youth that were involved on Monday night may not be fully aware of what she was saying, but what she was doing in a sense was raising the uncertainty or the ambiguity of the situation. And when you have a lot of ambiguity in a situation, then all sorts of ways of expressing behavior can take place because there are no clear lines. And so she contributed to that. The second thing was that the police commissioner and the police force, by all information that I have, sort of held back. And when people are burning stores and throwing rocks at firefighters who are simply trying to put out fires and are not involved in the social and racial justice issues and cut the a hose that the firefighters were using and setting fires in private residences where there could be children inside, etc. The police have to be active. They can't be holding back. Mm. There were something like 144 vehicle fires, for gosh sakes. So I think those two things were problematic on Monday night.
Yeah. Now, Madison, as I mentioned, is maybe a little bit on edge as we wait to hear whether the Dane County District Attorney will charge the officer who shot Tony Robinson. It's not clear exactly when the announcement will come, but there will be a 48-hour heads up. How do you suggest Madison's leaders proceed to limit any potential violence?
Well, clearly the leadership from the mayor on down has got to be unambiguous. Don't do a Stephanie Rawlings Blake statement. So keep it very clear and ensure that the police are indicating that they have what their strategies are. And, you know, there's got to be also some justifications why it's taken so long. You know, the Tony Robinson tragedy happened some time ago, and this is another fundamental problem that go back to Ferguson. The grand jury took too long, and you know, justice has to move quickly in this era, you know, when information is so quickly disseminated, people can congregate so quickly, demonstrations can arise so quickly. And here we have, you know, justice proceeding like a snail. And we can't have that. You know, in the case of Baltimore, you know, that death report, which is coming out tomorrow, I guess. Why did it take so long? You know, why couldn't it have come out literally within days? And transparency.
Yeah.
That's another key concept going forward. The public has to know what's taking place, you know, and therefore openness, transparency, and speed, I think, and timeliness are very important concepts. But leadership is key, you know, and that happened, it began to happen in Baltimore. Elijah Cummings one of the most famous, you know, Maryland politicians, national figure, was on the streets yesterday. It would have been great if there were that kind of leadership out on the streets on Monday. And I think that's very important for Madison.
Chris in Saratoga, go ahead.
Yeah, Joy, but I agree with your guest. He's hitting all around the issue. I'll tell you what a blue-collar urban youth is feeling. You have no future. Nobody cares about you. And you can go back to every trade agreement this country signed. There's no way an American worker is going to compete if you're blue-collar, average Joe. There's no way I'm going to compete with a Vietnamese and a Chinese. And you take away 5 million jobs, and now you laid the groundwork for social unrest. And Americans, if they don't get their head out of their butts, they're going to find out that there's going to be Chicago, Baltimore's today, tomorrow's Chicago.
Yeah, do you see this Frank Farley happening all over America?
Well, on the particular issue right now, arising out of Baltimore, there are demonstrations planned all over the country. We have one today in Philadelphia. It's being called Philly in Is Baltimore, and there's going to be a demonstration at City Hall. Denver is online, and many other cities are showing this. But it bespeaks, you know, an underlying almost social pathology that we have, which is racial justice, criminal justice. And I've articulated two or three of the problems with the criminal justice system that we have to clear up, because things don't seem to be getting much better. You know, if you go back to the Zimmerman case, you know, since that case, really, things haven't gotten better. They seem to have gotten worse.
Let me, because Frank Farley, we're out of time, wrap up very briefly, and we can talk to you about this more in a future program, but your role as the incoming president of the Society for the Study of Peace, Conflict, and Violence. Tell us about this, violence summit that you're planning to organize.
Yes, I'm organizing what I call the International Violence Summit. I'm planning it for next year. I will be president of that society in 2016. I don't know where I'll hold it, probably in Philadelphia. And what I want to do is bring together the best and the brightest thinkers about crime and violence and terror, etc., in one place. I plan to lock them up for a few days and say, you know, you've got 3 or 4 days to come up with some kind of a blueprint to end the violence that's just epidemic worldwide. And, you know, fields like psychology as a science is over 100 years old. You know, do we have any answers? Do other disciplines have answers? I want some police presence there. For example, the Philadelphia police chief, I plan to invite him, and he is Obama's point person on police and community relations. Obama has appointed him to that position. So I would want to get leading thinkers from across the spectrum to get together and see, is there any common ground? Do we have any workable principles that we can bring to bear worldwide to end or at least reduce the violence?
And we'll have to leave it there, and we'll pick up on the summit in a future program. Thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome, Joy.
Frank Farley, psychologist at Temple University. He is the president-elect of the Society for the Study of Peace, Conflict, and Violence. All right, Bill Martins joins me for the last couple of minutes of the program during this, our spring membership drive, to encourage you to make a pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You know, the state budget is in the news a lot, and as proposed, the budget cuts put funding for Wisconsin public broadcasting at risk. The state's investment has brought a wide range of public broadcasting services to Wisconsin, such as the ability to broadcast throughout the state, the emergency alert system, which is a public safety feature used by stations all over Wisconsin, including commercial stations.
Meanwhile, listener support, your support, keeps WPR programming strong. So thank you for your financial support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio keeps you informed and entertained every day. You get value from this program, maybe Garden Talk. How about Zorba Pastor On Your Health? And many others that you have come to rely on.
WPR gives you a window on the world like no other. So support this exciting mix of shows you enjoy on this station with your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks very much to Lori from Milwaukee, who has pledged. I listen almost every day and decided it was high time I contributed to this informative resource. Thank you, Lori. And Mike and Kim from Oconomowoc pledged. They say, thoughtful, well-balanced discussion is found on our radio station, Wisconsin Public Radio.
That's right. So if Wisconsin Public Radio is something that is of importance to you, you listen to the Joy Cardine Show every day, make a pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thanks to Mary from Delafield. I learned so much from listening to WPR. It's coverage I trust. It keeps me informed about what's happening locally and throughout the world. Thank you, Mary. You can pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.